ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Welcome to another episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us for the first time this week is Daily Maverick Managing Editor Zukiswa Pikoli. Here's what's coming your way. The clear divide between what government chooses to celebrate on Human Rights Day and what's really happening on the ground. Then, one basic human right countless South Africans are living without.
If the basics are not being taken care of, and now we're at an issue where infrastructure has not been maintained, it becomes a problem. That threatens our water security. That threatens our national security.
Later, we need to talk about the MK Party and how kids on the Cape Flats are helping sunbirds find their way home. But first, it's the headline that left many South Africans stunned. Marcus Huister is dead. The man who orchestrated South Africa's largest corporate crash died by suicide last week, less than 24 hours after another crushing defeat. But it was soon revealed that an almost half a billion rand fine wasn't the only thing weighing heavy on the former Steinhoff CEO's shoulders.
Welcome to The Whole Week Wrap. Firstly, tell us, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I have had a bit of an early start to the day with the breaking news of Marcus Huister, obviously, and what's happening with the Speaker of Parliament. But other than that, I'm well.
Yeah, two very, very big stories. And we're definitely dealing with one of them today. And that is, of course, the Marcus Huister story. Now, last week, Thursday, many of us were shocked to hear that former Steinhoff CEO Marcus Huister had died. It's still early days, but from what we can gather, he reportedly died by suicide just hours before he and Steinhoff's former legal head, Stian Grobler, were set to hand themselves over to the Hawks. Firstly, what was your reaction when you heard of Huister's death?
My reaction was, well, this is giving Gavin Watson vibes.
Yes.
It always seems as though as soon as the next seems to be closing in on these, you know, kind of fraudsters, something dramatic like a suicide happens or a car crash. So those are my immediate thoughts. Like, wow, the timing is a little crazy.
Definitely. The walls were certainly closing in on him. First of all, there was the Financial Sector Conduct Authorities, or the FSCA's ruling that used to pay a massive fine of 475 million. Rands, it was now revealed that the Hawks said, hey, buddy, it's time to hand yourself over because you have some explaining to do. I think this is a very bitter pill for many South Africans to swallow, considering the man accused of spearheading the entire Steinhoff scandal will now never face true accountability, which for me is the real tragedy in all of this.
I think I would also be not just disappointed, but actually a little incensed that just as a justice is seemingly about to be meted out, it's actually curtailed like this, because really he impacted millions of people's lives. And I really think it's a travesty, because what happens then? And I think it's always good to have these kinds of examples, right, where it is shown that the wheels of justice may turn slowly, but they do turn. And now to have it kind of halfway snuffed is really, really unfortunate.
Well, obviously the case will continue, the criminal case. Stian Grobler, as I've said, the former legal head, he will be facing trial on his own now, it seems. But I also heard an interesting conversation earlier around how this almost opens up the way for many people to now scapegoat Marcus Huister, because he can't defend himself anymore.
Yes, I mean, there's no honor amongst thieves, right? He's also dead now, so it would be easy enough to just lay everything on him. Already, he has been obviously the face of what happened in Steinhoff. And so that in itself could end up making the case drag on a little longer than it needs to actually go, because what do you do? I mean, a dead man can't speak, right? But I think that's also up to the authorities to employ the necessary tactics in order for them to be able to get the truth out of the accused.
Every year on the 21st of March, South Africans reflect on the events of the Sharpeville massacre that left 69 people dead. But the day has also become a stark reminder of just how much the ANC has seemingly turned its back on the very constitution it fought so hard for.
from load shedding to staggering crime levels to failing infrastructure. It's becoming increasingly clear that the ruling party is no longer for the people. I want us to move on to Human Rights Day. Last week, the country reflected on the many basic rights we as a country are able to enjoy. But I think more and more as the years progress, it also turns the spotlight onto the many basic rights we don't get to enjoy. And I'm specifically talking about things like electricity and water, waste management, education, adequate healthcare, equality, and, you know, safety and security. I want to know how you feel about Human Rights Day.
Yeah, you know, it would be remiss of me not to mention the premise of Human Rights Day. It's important that we keep in our imaginations how the day came about. It's a day where 69 people were massacred in Sharpeville in 1960. Why were they massacred? Because they were protesting for their basic human rights, right? Yes. Because they were protesting against the past laws, which were unjust. People died for this Human Rights Day. And the ANC government right now, led by Cyril Ramaphosa, was part of this struggle for the contestation of these human rights, that everybody receives these human rights. And yet, present day, they seem to have betrayed their own struggle. Yeah. And I think that's what I think about when we observe Human Rights Day. And that's why the platitudes are not enough. You know, we need to look deeper and see what it is that the government is actually doing to take their own struggle forward. And at this point, as you've mentioned, some of these service delivery issues and basic human rights that people are being denied, they're not doing very well.
Since you mentioned President Cyril Ramaphosa, I want to also look at the National Conference on Human Rights, where he delivered an address. I understand the theme for this year's conference was, quote, 3 decades of respect for and promotion of human rights. Do you feel that it was maybe quite detached from what's really happening on the ground? Because I remember his weekly newsletter that was released on the Monday. I was reading it as well, and I was thinking, this guy is so out of touch. He's not registering what's really happening.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said, platitudes are not enough. And I think that was more of what was happening at this conference. I think within the 30 years of democracy that we've had, we can probably say the first 15 years were probably the good 15 years. The latest 15 years, for me, have not taken that kind of struggle forward. I have difficulty in even believing him, right, when he says there's much to be done. Because his track record, if we are going to look at, you know, his presidency and even of his deputy presidency, doesn't reflect that. One of the things that was highlighted is this issue of corruption and the need to clamp down on corruption. And yet we have leaders currently in the cabinet, in the legislature, who have been implicated in many corruption cases. A lot of them have been implicated in the state capture report by Justice Zondo, and what is happening to those people? What is the decisive action that is happening? We are still waiting for those recommendations to be implemented. So it's not enough to go into a conference like this, you know, and talk a big game. And yet when we look at the track record, it's found wanting. To a certain extent, it's also insulting to the citizens that you're actually even addressing on this day, that you yourself have no real sense of the state, that you're actually not even in touch with the issues. What would take the conversation forward is to say, these are the steps that are now being taken. I think that for me would have sent a much stronger point across and maybe make me a little less skeptical around these kind of Human Rights Day commemorations.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
As several Johannesburg residents pick up the pieces following a debilitating water outage earlier this month, several other cities and metros across the country are still withering as taps remain dry. It raises the question, if government can't guarantee clean, drinkable water in an election year, what does the future hold?
Speaking of basic human rights, if you're in Joburg, like the two of us are, you would know that it has been a less than fun time in recent weeks with continuous water outages across several suburbs. There's also been a lot of upset from residents, and rightfully so. But Joburg is certainly not the only city that's experiencing water woes. We've seen water outages in Tshwane, Tzaneen, Kwakwa. I mean, I could list so many more, but it's clear that something something is very wrong with South Africa's water infrastructure. Since we're both in Joburg, firstly, how did the whole water outage impact you? For me, it was an unbearable time.
Yeah, probably the same thing, because, I mean, what do we do without water?
Yes.
Like, we can't do the basic of functions and take a shower or wash the dishes or cook.
While I was preparing for today's show, I read a report released in 2019 by Dr. Hlamulo Makelane from the Nelson Mandela University, in which she predicted that South Africa could face serious water scarcity by 2025. That's next year. And she still sticks to that prediction. It also details some measures government needs to take to perhaps avoid our taps running dry, the biggest one being large-scale investments in water infrastructure. We've seen that hasn't been happening. Do you think it's too late to get ahead of it? Do you think it's a done deal? Or are you an optimist?
I like to think of myself as a pragmatic optimist. Firstly, South Africa is already a water scarce country, right? Mm. And I think in accepting that, it means that the measures that need to be put in place to safeguard our water need to go above and beyond the basics. Now, if the basics are not being taken care of, and now we're at an issue where infrastructure has not been maintained, it becomes a problem that threatens our water security, that threatens our national security. Because as you've seen, people are growing more and more and more disenchanted and impatient. And what happens when people get impatient? Then there's protests. What could potentially come of protests and even worse situation? In this instance, you can understand why things would get there, because water is life. I mean, there's communities who have been without water for months. Mm. You know, how do you explain that? How are people meant to live? How is that being a government that cares about the people? Yeah. But also in terms of taking and safeguarding our infrastructure, these are not things that would have not been foreseen, right? It means there hasn't been a proper investment in ensuring that the water systems are operating at an optimal level, right? Mm-hmm. And now the question becomes, is it an issue of capacity or is it an issue of incompetence? That's what our government needs to actually grapple with. And it's not a finger-pointing exercise. The issue is, what is your responsibility as a government to ensure the citizens get the basic services that they deserve?
Since its formation about 6 months ago, the Umkhonto weSizwe Party, or MK Party, has made itself known in grand fashion. With former President Jacob Zuma as the face of the party, the organization, often referred to as a mere ANC breakaway faction, has made inroads in both KZN and Mpumalanga. Judging by the ANC's frantic attempts last week to prevent the MK Party from taking part in this year's elections, the presence of this political newbie cannot be denied. We really need to talk about the MK Party. The new political party has caused quite a stir, especially in KZN and a bit in Mpumalanga as well, with polls indicating the MK Party could walk away with a significant chunk of votes come election day on the 29th of May. Firstly, I want to know from you, what is your take on the MK Party and its chances of gaining a sizable support base?
It's the ANC eating itself, to be honest, because these are people that are coming from within the ANC and for whatever reason have felt disgruntled enough to now look outside of the party. In terms of what support they're likely to get, I guess it remains to be seen. There are certain people who are responding to the party, who the party speaks to, and that in itself needs to be examined.
Now, the MK Party consists of a number of individuals from the ANC or former ANC members, but they've also been implicated in state capture, most notably the one you can't ignore, and that's Jacob Zuma. He's essentially become the face of the party, even though he can't stand for presidency or any of those things. What does this level of support that they're receiving say about voter sentiment?
We cannot deny that Zuma had a support base within the ANC, within the country. It's evident. And for me, it points to a lot of loyalists of Zuma who are now banding around him with this MK party. So when you speak of the people who've been implicated in the state capture, who was the key person within the state capture, that's Jacob Zuma. So it makes sense that those kinds of people would then be banding around him. Because now Zuma no longer occupies a prominent part within the political party or even in government, these people now also find themselves isolated specifically from proximity to power. And so this is an attempt, I guess, for them to power up, for lack of a better phrase, and regroup and see how they take themselves forward, but also how they protect themselves from actually fully facing the law.
And I mean, we've seen the ANC fighting very hard to prevent the MK party from taking part in this year's elections. Do you see that the ANC's fear of the MK party is warranted?
Yeah, well, I mean, that remains to be seen, right, in terms of how many votes that they actually end up amassing. But I don't think the ANC will necessarily lose too much of the people's vote. But I think if you look at how the MK party has been operating, a lot of it has also been around fear-mongering, right? Threats. Yes. That if we do not get the two-thirds majority, we're going to make this country ungovernable, burn it to the ground, right? Mm. And that in itself is designed to induce fear, intimidate. And you have to also ask yourself, what kind of party is this that rules by fear and intimidation, right? Mm. And if you look at some of these people, it's people who also were implicated in the July unrest of 2021. The people who were wanting to protect Zuma at all costs from going to jail at the time. And those people probably were within the ANC, but were part of Zuma's faction while he was still within the ANC. So yes. It remains to be seen just how strong that faction is. And that's what the ANC, I suppose, is related to it. Because remember, Zuma is also seen as a man of the people, man of the masses. And that really is where the strong voter base is. However, the masses are also not stupid. The masses are also able to think for themselves. And that's not to say that everybody's suddenly going to go with Zuma now. But it is to say that he has that common man's touch. You know, he's able to speak to the man on the ground. And that's what, you know, the ANC needs to also look at in terms of, again, being out of touch, being tone deaf to what people are actually wanting, not delivering on issues of service delivery, and constantly being in a situation where people are being put on the back foot and feeling like they are not being prioritized.
Sunbirds, they're tiny, fast, and they seem to have lost their way home. This according to conservationists who have found that urban sprawl across the Western Cape has sent these little birds on a flight to nowhere. But an innovative campaign by Inkunku Sunbird Restoration is hoping to point migrating sunbirds in the right direction, one fynbos plant at a time.
Onto our green shoot for the week, and this one made me smile. It's about sunbirds and how children in Cape Town are helping these stunning little birds find their way home. In short, schools across the Cape Flats are encouraging pupils to plant various kinds of fynbos that attract these sunbirds because, as we know, due to rapid urbanization, roadworks, and large-scale developments, these little birds, their route spanning from, I think it's from the mountain ranges of Mosenburg to Stellenbosch has been disrupted. So I really think it's a great initiative. I love it when people and campaigns involve children in their campaigns, because that is, after all, the generation that you need to teach and need to empower with the necessary skills.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, you know, the children are literally the future. This is an excellent teaching and learning moment for children to understand how the ecosystem works and their role within the ecosystem, and also the roles that sometimes are negative that people play and how they can work to act against that themselves. So I think it's a good way to kind of get that sort of ownership for children to understand things in that kind of sense.
What I also loved when I was reading the piece on Ground Up specifically about this program is that in the Cape Flats, there's not a lot of natural spaces available to children or the residents who live there in general. You know, it gives them access to the outdoors. It's a safe space outdoors, and they get to learn in the process. It also gives children access to, you know, extracurricular activities that are not just sports related. And yeah, it's just always lovely to shine a light on these types of programs because, as you've said, children are the future.
Yeah, no, it's true. And what's important is also that children get a practical kind of sense of this, right? Mm-hmm. By participating directly as opposed to reading about it in a science book.
Yes, exactly. And also seeing the birds actually arrive in these little gardens, which I think is also very special to the kids, because then they see their handiwork. It's not just this theoretical idea that, as you've said, is written down in a book somewhere. Yeah. But this has been a lovely, lovely chat. I know this was your first time on the Whole Week Wrap with us. And yeah, this has been awesome. And I look forward to doing it again with you very soon.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I had a good time as well. To the next
awesome. One. Yes, definitely. Enjoy your week.
All right. Thanks so much.
And that's a wrap. Join us again next week as we unpack more local and international headlines. Until then, give Carte Blanche and Daily Maverick a like and follow on socials.